Dr. Most is on a phone line. You know Dr. Kevin Most, the Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medical Center, DuPage Hospital. Hi, Dr. Most. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Just talk to me briefly. What are your thoughts about the safety of dining outdoors or maybe indoors with the limited capacity we're talking about?
Yeah, I think safety from dining outdoors is fine. You know, not only are they physically distancing, but you also have the air circulation that's pretty substantial. Even when there's minimal breeze, you still are diluting out, you know, any chance of droplets moving very quickly or very big distance. As we get indoors, it'll be interesting to see how they lay out the restaurants and what they're going to do to protect the individuals and protect the groups that you're in from others. So I'm optimistic that this is going to work out well.
What would you advise the governor to do about opening up the schools?
Yeah. So the schools is an issue that, you know, you depending on the experts that you listen to where they say children are not a vector for this, and others are saying, well, of course they're a vector for this. This is an upper respiratory infection just as they would be for common colds, influenza, and strep. You know, the schools, how are you going to keep the schools, especially for the younger kids, clean, and how are you going to keep them masked and distanced is going to be the big thing. That being said, I think we are going to have to move towards that. It's going to be a matter of, and if you do an abbreviated day, if you do a staggered day, you're still going to have the same economic stress on the parents who need to go to work.
Do you think we're just going to have to accept a certain sort of herd immunity that kids are going to get sick, staff's going to get sick, then they won't be sick, and that's the way it's going to be? That it's inevitable, isn't it, Doc?
Yeah, it probably is, John, and I think the one thing I would say is for parents of young children, if they do go back in school, then you have to be extremely careful when they go and visit the grandparents. They have to be extremely careful when they're going to visit anybody who would be deemed to be vulnerable. So we'd be put the same safeguards in place that we do now, but just on hypervigilance when we're talking about those individuals that we have the biggest concern for.
Young people don't show the symptoms or don't suffer as much. I mean, really, the people that are dying are obviously the people over the age of 55, and the people under the age of, say, 20 hardly even know they have it. I guess my point is that were they to all go back to school, even if they get infected, it won't be that dangerous to them.
Potentially not that dangerous to them, exactly. But what we're seeing, and look what's happening in Arizona and Florida, where are the big numbers of the positive results coming from? Big numbers of the positives are coming from the young adults, which is not surprising, right? They're socially active. They feel the infection won't impact them. They're not seeing bad outcomes in their peers. Unfortunately, they are now exposing themselves to vulnerable populations, and now you're seeing in Arizona, look at the number of ICU beds, the ventilators usage, and the hospitalization skyrocketing. You know, that's the concern we have here, is that as we go into phase four, let's make sure we're doing all the things we've been doing for the past couple of months, and let's make sure we continue those and don't get to this false sense of security and complacency.
Dr. Kevin Most is on a phone line. If you want to jump in with the doc, 312-981-7200. What did you make, then, of the president speaking in front of a few thousand Arizona college students last night?
Disappointed. I think both the interactions that he's had over the past week have been disappointing to a lot of the medical professionals. A lot of the messages as well as the visuals of it are very disappointing. You know, here we are in Illinois where we have a governor and a mayor of the largest city that are going to be cautious and try to do as well as we can in controlling this, and now you have the leader up there doing almost the exact opposite. So concerning, John, of the message that's being sent and the repercussions of what's going to happen. You know, look where he was talking in Arizona. You know, there's hospitals in Arizona that are out of ICU beds. There's hospitals in Arizona that are saying, oh my gosh, we can't handle this, these numbers. We don't want that to happen in Illinois again. We dodged the bullet from what happened in New York. Look at what happened in Illinois. With people in Illinois behaving and doing right, we weren't as stressed. Our hospital and our health systems were not as stressed as much as they were in New York, Italy, Germany, Spain, wherever you pick, because we were behaving well.
Do you think it's plausible to have instant testing at the schools so that if the kids are going off to school, maybe every Monday everybody gets an instant test to see if they have COVID at that moment?
Yeah, John, you know, everyone's talking about the vaccine, and I go the other and talk more about what you're talking about is the instant testing. You know, just Google breathalyzer COVID testing, and you'll see that there are companies right now that are working on a simple breathalyzer test to see if you have COVID. If we get to that point, not only are schools okay, sporting events are okay, concerts are okay, just knowing that you're going to be tested as you walk in, and if we get it to the point where it's as simple as a breathalyzer, you could do it every day. And but the issue of let's wait for a vaccine, let's wait for a vaccine, I think we're going to have technology of testing that may beat the vaccine.
Dr. Fauci said he thinks the U.S. is still on track to get it at the end of the year.
And believe me, he's the best, and he knows, and he has all the insight, and we have 130 companies now, if I'm not mistaken, working on vaccines. He probably gets the inside data a lot more than we do. If we do, that's great, but we all have to remember, too, that the initial vaccine for almost any illness, when we look at the history of vaccines, the first vaccine out of the box has not been the vaccine that we've ended up with using on a consistent basis. So we may have one, and then it may be perfected over years, but if we can get one and get the right people vaccinated, that's probably the biggest point, then we may have a better flu season this year.
Is your point that having it in the laboratory is one thing, but getting it to people and actually it doing us any good is another?
Correct. And getting it to the right people, John. We want to make sure that the vulnerable population, those that are going to end up in hospitals on ventilators and in intensive care units, those are the ones that we're going to want to protect. And yet we might have lines and lines and lines of people who want it just because they don't want to get ill.
My number is 312-981-7200. We're picking up your phone lines for Dr. Kevin Most after I just asked him to comment on this other story. It was in the Tribune the other day in a widely circulated video clip from a hearing last week on mandatory mask wearing in Orange County, California. An angry woman told officials she feared that masks made her rebreathe her own carbon dioxide, a waste product, when we exhale. There's a feeling out there that healthy people wearing masks are doing themselves more harm than good, Doc. What do you say about that?
No, the science has proven that to be totally incorrect, John. So the individual who said, I'm rebreathing all this CO2, unless they're wearing a plastic mask, essentially like a bag over their head, that's not going to happen. Right?
Well, maybe they were. I don't know. I didn't see the video.
Yeah, that could be. Yeah. So really, when we look at masks, we've even looked at masks for individuals with asthma, with COPD, so with major breathing problems, and we found that as long as you're wearing the right mask, the resistance of inhaling or exhaling should not really impact you that much. Now, the individual who gets short of breath when they take 3 steps, absolutely, those are going to happen. But those individuals can wear a loosely fitted mask. Again, the mask is protecting us, the regular public, from that individual. So if they were to be asymptomatic and cough, the droplets would be caught in that mask, or at least a large portion of them would. So we have to understand why we're wearing masks and make sure we're wearing them appropriately.
Should students in classrooms wear a mask in the classroom?
I think unless we can test the individuals, then yes. Especially, you know, when we look at kids. You know, I see this as we're all young kids right now, and we need to be told to wear masks. And we want to get to young adulthood where we can make the decision of when a mask is appropriate. And the bad thing is we don't want to go through these adolescent and teen years where we're reckless and we do whatever we please. So right now I think that masks in kids are going to be really important, and it's going to be difficult. How do you tell that second grader, third grader to wear a mask at all times?
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, Dr. Most, we're just getting just being reported out of Washington by a couple of outlets that the federal government is going to end funding and support for 13 coronavirus testing sites in 5 states by the end of the month. Apparently, there are some federally run sites, 13 in all, 7 of them in Texas, which is a hotspot now. But they are going to wind down the funding. They say it is an effort to broaden the cooperation between local government and private industry. Senator Ted Cruz is against this idea from Texas. They apparently originally planned to start doing this in April, but extended it through June. Now they're winding it down. That's sort of breaking news right now. I just wonder what you make of that.
Steve, extremely disappointing. You know, when you go to get your testing, do you know whether it's run by FEMA or whether it's run by the state of Illinois or whether it's run by a local health department? No, you don't. You have no clue. All you want to know is tell me the closest place that I can go get tested. And right now, our push is to get the asymptomatic and as many people tested as we possibly can. So if we're going to close down facilities, then that's just going to decrease the opportunity for more people to be tested, which isn't surprising with some of the comments that have been made recently. But in the healthcare profession right now, we're looking at identify as many of these asymptomatic people as we can so that we can slow this spread down even more. And in Illinois, we've done a great job of it. So it's disappointing that comment came out and that they're going to close those.
Interesting. Thanks for that answer. And Steve, that question. By the way, Jerry also had a question for you. Jerry, you're on WGN. What's on your mind?
Yes. First, John, thank you because I appreciate your candor and your willingness to hear both sides of a story. Dr. Most, always enjoyable for your input and thoughtfulness.
Thank you.
My question is, coming out of San Francisco, I'm reading something that says that after you have had COVID, you don't get over it like you get over the flu. It comes back and you have you could have stroke, heart attack, your blood is very thick, and your oxygen in your lungs are damaged almost permanently. Is that true?
So, Jerry, yeah, it's interesting. What we're finding out now is the individuals who that actually get COVID and get the symptoms and get it very severely, what are the long-term repercussions of that? While you have the illness, while you are actually sick with it in the hospital, we know that you have an increased chance for blood clots. So we treat patients with blood thinners all the time now with COVID.
Really?
The question is, once they get over COVID, how much longer do we have to treat them with blood thinners to prevent any possibilities of stroke or pulmonary embolisms or any clots like that? We're figuring that out now. Do they stay on a blood thinner for 30 days? Do they stay on it for 50 days? Do they need it at all? That is being looked at very closely right now, as we noted, increased blood clots in COVID patients. As far as the lung portion of it, we do know that those individuals who get on ventilators, who get like what we call ARDS, those individuals are going to have some permanent damage to their lungs. We know that. And that portion of the lung is not going to regenerate. It's going to be damaged for a long time, forever, potentially. And that really we're going to see people with less ability to exchange oxygen, may not have the tolerance for exercise that they've had in the past. And that's one of the concerning things that we want to identify these people early to potentially get a medication to keep them from getting to that point where they're on the ventilator in the intensive care unit.
I got to let you go, Doc. We did not see an uptick in cases because of the protests, did we?
We didn't, John, and that's extremely reassuring. You know, we haven't, and we're really kind of hitting that point where we would have expected it by now.
Yeah.
And across the country, we really didn't see it. We're seeing it more from the social interactions at, you know, in bars and restaurants in Florida and Arizona,
Wisconsin.
But we didn't see it from the rallies.
Dr. Kevin Most, we'll call you again. I haven't talked to you in a while, Doctor. I always hear you Mondays with who's the guy that does the morning show here, Bob Surratt?
Yeah, I think that's his name.
But yeah. I'm going to call you again. I appreciate your time, sir.
John, you can call anytime. You know that.
That's Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer at Northwestern Medical Center, DuPage Hospital.